Welcome back to our very unofficial from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, Monsignor John Kennedy, for our second episode in the series Questions of Faith, looking at the Sacrament of Marriage.
Hello, Emma. Nice to see you again.
Last week we spoke about preparation for marriage, what the sacrament actually is and how we should approach it. This week we decided we were going to focus on another aspect of marriage, which is particularly important to many people out there, and that's what the church can do to help people who find themselves in difficulty in marriage, so to help them through and to live out this sacrament. So let us begin, because I know there's many, many questions that have come in. Question number one. Monsignor Kennedy, when a married couple experiences difficulties in their relationship, what can the church do to help?
The answer is the church can do lots, and people should try and avail of this help as quickly as they can. As a priest, the reality is that apart from the experience of everyday pastoral life in a parish, for example, all those people who study canon law come face to face with the very sad and heartbreaking reality of marriage breakdown and sometimes ultimate marriage failure. It would be difficult at this point to mention all of the reasons why marriage breakdown happens, but we know from experience that it occurs often due to insufficient preparation, sometimes a lack of communication between the spouses, different expectations, stresses arising from the modern world and from work, and also a prevailing culture of instant gratification, and the presence also, the availability of no-fault divorce in some countries, realities to which practicing Catholics are not immune. It's important to say that while difficulties may be present in a marriage, their mere presence does not automatically and inevitably lead to marital breakdown. Difficulties can sometimes help couples to pause and to refocus. Other times, separation and divorce are preventable, and the church has many willing and able personnel who are on hand to help.
Can you tell us just a little bit more about what kind of help is available, the kind of help you're speaking about?
There's help available both before and after marriage. Let me explain this in some detail. When I was in a parish, I often celebrated weddings. Part of the journey of accompaniment with couples was to encourage them to invest time in their own personal preparation for the sacrament, for their wedding day, and for their life together by doing a pre-marriage course, or sometimes known as a pre-cana course. Sometimes I could see by the faces of the couples that they were a little reluctant, and they would start sheepishly telling me that they felt they didn't need to do the course. And then they would say, well, what is this about anyway? And I can honestly say, having explained what it was all about and the structure and who gave the course, that in all of the years I've been spending helping married couples, only one chap ever came back to me to say to me that he didn't enjoy the course, in part because he didn't want to go from the outset. But most people, having completed the weekend course or having followed a series of individual meetings over a period of a couple of days or a longer time, were raving about the course and said that it played a very positive and helpful role in helping them to get ready for marriage. And I think at this stage it's important to state that if a couple doesn't do a marriage course, the priest in the parish or the priest who's celebrating their wedding must prepare them himself.
And in fact, it's not always a case where it's just the priest who's doing these courses. He usually enlists the help of couples within the parish who have been married for years, who have a certain experience, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, why was the course a success for the vast majority of those who attended the courses in your parish?
Well, because in part the course was led by other married couples who were married themselves and were able to speak in a language that was easily understandable for the couple preparing for marriage. A second aspect was that often the couples attending the course were with their own contemporaries and were presented with questions and matters for discussion that they sometimes hadn't spoken about before with each other. And these topics sometimes came as a surprise to them. And then finally, when the priest made his own input, often towards the end of the course, the couple realised maybe for the first time, how much the church was interested in their spiritual lives and how much the church wanted to make this moment for them as significant and as special as possible.
Let's look at the whole question of when a person believes that his or her marriage might be what is termed as null and wants to know more about the process. What exactly is to be done? Basically, what does it mean and what is the difference between what we know as a divorce and what the church describes as an annulment?
Well, if a couple feels that the marriage is in crisis, the first thing to do is to speak to the local priest. Could be a priest who celebrated your wedding, could be a friend, could be a good holy man in the parish you feel you can approach. And if you can't do that, make an appointment to see a member of the bishop's tribunal if you happen to live near where the bishop resides. And let me maybe get to the second part of your question, because what I want to say here is that there's a very useful and well-known presumption in civil law where we would call this a legal principle, and this holds that a person is innocent until proven guilty. Now, if someone wants to prove, for instance, that I'm guilty of a crime, they have to bring proof to support their claim. And this is what we call the onus, or the responsibility, the burden of proof, which would have to then overturn the presumption of innocence. Because if you think about it, if we have a world where everyone were guilty until proven innocent, then we'd have chaos. So in a similar way, all marriages, provided certain conditions are fulfilled, are presumed to be valid at the moment of celebration. We also say in canon law that marriage enjoys the favour of law. And this means that the law is on the side of people getting married, just like the law is on the side of the innocent person. And when we use the word valid in canon law to describe a marriage, we use this on purpose, because the Latin word validus means strong or sound or solid. And so that's why we say when a couple gets married, there's no doubt, either from the point of view of the law or in other people's mind, that that marriage is a solid, sound, strong marriage. If, however, you think for some reason that the marriage you entered with somebody might be invalid, then you have to examine this marriage in the presence of the bishop's tribunal, and you have to also bring proof to show that it is invalid. So that's one side. The other side is to look at the question of divorce. The word divorce comes from Latin divortium, and it means to separate or to leave one's spouse or to turn aside. From the Latin word divortium, we get the Italian word divertire. So if you drive a car and you're driving down the road and you come across a diversion, then that road takes you a different way. And that's what divorce means. It means leaving the marriage to go in a different way. And so divorce is understood as the final termination of a marital union. It's a cancelling of the legal duties, the legal responsibilities of marriage. It's a dissolving of the very bonds of marriage. Divorce law, you'll find, if you look in different countries, will vary considerably all around the world. But in most countries, it requires the sanction of a court or some other authority having done a legal process. The legal process of divorce may also involve questions of alimony, which is spousal support, child custody, child support, distribution of property held in common, and division of debt.
So is annulment actually any different to divorce?
In a word, yes. It's in fact very different to a divorce. The civil law of a country facilitates marriage and often permits divorce. People who marry and then divorce civilly are then free. They're given the freedom by the state, by the law, to enter a new marriage. The first marriage is put aside, terminated, and the person is free then, if you like, to start again. The church sees things differently. We presume that once a marriage is celebrated in church with God's blessing, or once a marriage takes place between two people who are not baptized, whether this be in a different church or civilly or in some other way, that marriage is valid. And for the church, a valid marriage is for life, or as the spouses themselves say, till death do us part. And for that reason, no earthly power can undo what God does in joining together a man and woman. And that's why a priest at the end of the exchange of consent, which is the moment at which a husband marries the wife and the wife marries the husband, the priest says, what God has joined together, let no man separate.
But can the church grant an annulment? And if it can, what is the difference then between an annulment and divorce? Aren't we contradicting ourselves? Is this not just a form of Catholic, inverted commas, divorce?
No, the answer is no. To maybe illustrate this in a visual way, let's think about a swimming pool. A man wants to build a swimming pool in his garden. There are several different and important elements to doing so properly. You have to get planning permission before digging the right sized hole. Then you have to build and insulate the walls. You have to protect them from the soil in case of a cave-in. You have to prepare the surface of the swimming pool, tile the walls, get the pump ready, and then finally plumb the pool to the water supply. If one of these elements is missing and you end up not being able to go for a swim because there's a leak or because the pump won't work or because the walls cave in or the tiles break away, then no matter how well you think the thing looks or seems, you don't have what we call a proper swimming pool. The whole thing is not sound, or to use another analogy, it won't hold water. Marriage too, you could say, is a unity. It's something which is made up of several critical elements. And if one of these elements is missing, then we have a problem. If there's a critical element missing, then we say in the church that the marriage not only doesn't exist, but in fact it never came into existence. So take, for example, Christian marriage. And let's look at, the place of Christian marriage. If the bride and groom are members of the Catholic Church, they're baptised, they've made the First Communion, they're confirmed, then if they want to get married, they are obliged to observe what we call in canon law canonical form, the form of marriage in church. And this means that they require to get married in front of a priest in a church. If they don't do this, and let's say they get married civilly, on the beach, under some palm trees, maybe drive in one of these drive-in sort of places you can just get married, or if they get married by a judge, then the church will say that although this looked like marriage, you know, kind of had the appearance of marriage, there was something critical missing, and as a result that marriage never came into existence, and therefore that marriage is automatically null. For the church, this marriage doesn't exist. We say that something like marriage, but it's not the sacrament of Catholic marriage. And in this circumstance, the church can grant an annulment. Or another way of saying this is it declares that the marriage was null from the very beginning. So in short, we say that if a sound marriage does not come into existence, we declare that it never existed from the very beginning. And that is what an annulment is. Although it might appear like it, on close examination, it's not. And it's important to say there that a declaration of nullity is not the dissolution or the destroying or the tearing apart or the cancelling of an existing marriage, but rather a determination that the sacrament never actually got conferred due to a failure to meet a requirement to enter it validly. And that's why an annulment is different to a divorce. A divorce breaks up something which was. A declaration of nullity says that it never was in the first place.
But are there many reasons on which an annulment can actually be granted?
Yes, the Catholic Church affirms that in a true marriage, a man and a woman become one flesh before the eyes of God. The Church views marriage as a sacrament validly contracted and entered into by one man and one woman. Various impediments, however, can render a person unable to validly contract a sacramental marriage. And besides impediments, matrimonial consent can be rendered null due to what we call invalidating factors, such as simulation, deceit, or psychic incapacity. So let's look at these for a moment. A marriage can be declared null because there's an impediment. Now think of an impediment as a tree which has fallen down on the road in front of you as you're driving along. It won't let you pass. So some impediment, something which would block you entering marriage, would be, for example, being too young. I mean, if you're 12, you can't enter marriage. That's just clear. if there is a case of antecedent, so happening beforehand, or perpetual impotence, then you can't get married. Now, it's important here to say that impotence is not sterility. So that means that, for example, if a woman is 50 and she's gone through the change of life, she can still get married. However, a man or a woman who might be impotent cannot enter marriage. Ligamen, which is a Latin word, and that means a previous bond. So if I'm married to another Catholic and I'm not a priest, for example, then I can't marry somebody else because I'm already married. There's a previous bond. The next situation is where one party is Catholic and the other party hasn't been baptised. Automatically, there's an impediment, but that impediment can be dispensed. Now, take my situation. I'm a man who's ordained to the priesthood. So there's an impediment to me getting married, no matter how I would try. If I travelled every country in the world looking for every other priest, they'd all tell me the same thing. I am impeded. I cannot, by virtue of holy orders. And let's say there's a woman who has made a perpetual vow of chastity in a religious institute. She's a nun. She's a sister. She's also blocked from becoming a wife. If a man abducts a woman with the intention of marriage, then that person can't marry that person as long as the kidnapped person remains in the kidnapper's power. But for example, if she decides, oh well, I like him anyway and I'm going to marry him freely of my own free will and consent, then she is. But as long as she's under his power, in other words, as long as she's held trapped, then she can't get married to him. Or the same if a man is trapped by a woman. The other impediment is called the impediment of crime. And this is where a man wanting to marry a woman who's already married brings about the death of her spouse. And that's with the intention of marrying her. He can't. The church will block a marriage like that. There are other relationships which are cause impediments. Consanguinity. So that's a relationship by blood. Or there's also a relationship by law, which is called affinity. Now, some of these things can be relaxed by a dispensation, particularly the relationship of consanguinity. So you can actually marry your cousin, but only to a certain degree. You can't marry your second cousin unless you have a dispensation.
Are there any other grounds for nullity besides these impediments?
Yes, a marriage can be declared invalid because at least one of the two parties was not free to consent to the marriage or didn't fully commit to the marriage at the time of exchanging consent. So, for example, grounds for nullity include simulation of consent. And that means it's the conscious and positive exclusion at the moment of consent by either one or both of the contracting parties of all or one of the essential properties or goods of marriage. That sounds very complicated. But for example,
so we went through the properties last week, didn't we?
Exactly. So, for example, if you exclude the exclusivity of the marital relationship, or if you exclude the permanence of the marital bond, or if you're closed to the openness to offspring as a natural fruit of marriage, then the marriage can be declared null. The other one is a deliberate deceit about some personal quality that can be objectively and gravely detrimental to the conjugal life. I mean, I just take for an example. Let's say I deceive my wife-to-be into the fact that I have a life-threatening disease and I'm going to be very, very sick and I'm going to be infectious and so on. And if I deceive her into that and she goes in to marry me and later discovers that this is so detrimental to the married life, she can actually have an annulment. If we make consent conditional, then the condition must concern the past or the present. For example, if I say, I will only marry a person who is a Catholic, I will only marry a person who goes to Mass and be faithful because I want to bring up my children in the faith and practice my faith. And if this person deceives me into saying that he's a Catholic and I find out afterwards that he's not, then that gives you an example. If there's force or grave fear imposed on a person to obtain their consent, then the marriage can be declared null. If there's a serious lack of discretion of judgment at consent concerning those essential matrimonial rights and obligations, that's the same situation. And finally, if there's some sort of psychic incapacity present at the moment of consent, which relates to the undertaking of essential obligations of marriage, then we're talking about a possible nullity.
So are there various stages to the process of annulment?
The case is usually examined at what we call first instance, and that takes place in the local bishop's tribunal. Then the case is examined a second time by a different group of judges in a different tribunal, and if both groups of judges agree, then the marriage is declared null. However, if the first instance says yes and the second instance says no, so you don't have two conforming decisions, then it goes to a third hearing, which is usually at the Roman Rota. And the Roman Rota is a supreme court, if you like, where it will come down on the side either of the first or second, and that gives you two conforming decisions.
Can a divorced person receive the sacraments? This is one of the most frequently asked questions.
The answer is yes, but often people think that just because they're divorced, they can't participate in the life of the church. They can. And the difficulty arises, it's when they enter a second marriage or enter a civil marriage. And in this situation, they can't receive the sacraments. As long as they remain just separated and fulfil the usual conditions for the reception of sacraments, then they may receive the sacraments as any other person does.
Is a divorced person or a divorced and civilly remarried person outside the church? That's something we often hear.
The answer is no, and I'm sorry to hear that people might think in this way. It's often coming as a great shock to people to find out that the church cannot recognise a new civil union following a divorce, and then people feel a great sense of abandonment and loneliness and emptiness, genuine suffering, I would say, confusion, and even sometimes you can see this in people, even though they don't always put words on it. The new union that they've entered has brought them, you know, a certain amount of happiness, but there's often an inner peace which is lacking in their lives. On top of this, when they learn, for example, that as divorced and remarried Catholics, if they hadn't had the intention of actually looking for a declaration of nullity from the church, then in fact this civil marriage has really hindered them from receiving the sacraments. As a result of that, they often feel excluded and profoundly shaken. Some people say that to them that the situation hasn't been explained properly to them with enough sensitivity, and this can add to their pain as well. I've seen cases where some people could have had this explicitly and clearly explained to them, but it wasn't for some reason that I can't explain. And this often leads people to feel as if they're cut loose and left to drift on the open sea. And sometimes then they're in a situation like this for years, which could have been remedied much earlier. In this situation, I would strongly recommend to people that they approach their local priest and make an appointment then to see the marriage tribunal. It doesn't matter if you've been to the tribunal before. Perhaps there's something new that you have now, new information that can maybe help you. And I'd encourage them finally to try and not to feel excluded from the church, because there are many other ways in which they can practice and live their faith. Remember, it's baptism that makes us members of the church. Of course, they could and they should come to Mass, and they must pray, and they must pass on their faith to their children. They must also do works of charity and give witness to the faith in their Christian lives. Now, as far as receiving the sacraments is concerned, it would be disingenuous of any priest to say that it doesn't matter and that they can receive the sacraments, because this is clearly not the case. In such a situation, they know and we know and everybody knows they're in an irregular union. I've heard some people say that, oh, it doesn't matter, and, you know, let people make up their own mind, and if they feel it's all right. But I do think it's important to tell the people the truth and not give them a false understanding about their situation. In fact, I know from parish life that people often know this, and they know this will be the situation even before they get married, because the priest will tell them that he can't marry them in church, particularly when there's been a divorce of one or even both parties. And for that reason, the marriage can't be celebrated in church. And in fact, it's at this time, before the marriage is celebrated civilly, that people should be put in contact with the bishop's tribunal, where they can have their situation examined carefully and with compassion.
Thank you for bringing us on this journey through the sacrament of marriage, not just looking at the sacrament, but also looking at what the church can do for those people who find themselves in situations of crisis, of difficulty in their married life. The church is there to help. The priests are there to help. There are many lay people are committed there to help them. They're never alone, in other words.
Thanks, Eimear. See you next time.